From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Whatever happens here, we're not going to overspend. We're not going to, you know, start sweeping dollars from accounts that had been done before I became governor. We're not going to go back to the old practices of, you know, making us a credit-unworthy state.
Governor J.B. Pritzker, just a week until the scheduled adjournment of the Illinois General Assembly, and there is still uncertainty over a state budget and some other measures, and we'll talk about that coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie has also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And with us, good to have back, we have Patrick Keck. He covers the State House for Gannett Newspapers. Patrick, thanks for being with us once again.
Thanks for having me.
So, Patrick, last week on this show, we talked about the governor. He was getting some pushback on some revenue ideas. He's Deputy Governor Andy Menard sent a letter to agency heads saying, hey, prepare for possible budget cuts because we're not sure if we're going to have the revenue to pay for everything. So where do things stand now, a week later, and with only a week to go in the legislative session? Are we getting closer to coming to some agreement at this point?
Well, I would say at this point, you know, again, scheduled adjournment a week from today with the possibility that it will move past into they have built in kind of a, you know, just in case schedule if it does go longer. I would say at this point, we are still seeing a little bit of that contention. The governor was asked about, you know, who specifically was, you know, maybe concerned about some of these plans that he has, these a little over $1 billion in revenue adjustments, you know, changing things in the tax code, for one instance, changing the sports wagering tax, jumping that from 15% to 35%. At this point, it appears that it's not just Republicans that, you know, as expected, perhaps are maybe opposed to some of these changes, but Democrats. And that's, as things are built here in the General Assembly, that's where the votes, the majority of the votes are, of course. That's where the contention still lies within members of, you know, both chambers, both parties. We're seeing, you know, the governor just kind of preparing some department agencies to adjust. Deputy Governor Andy Menard sent out a letter requesting, you know, $800 million, if you could help us spot $800 million where, you know, we could maybe make some adjustments. That would be helpful. But at the same time, there's still a lot of groups that are wanting to get a piece of the pie, a larger piece than what the governor has called for in his budget proposal. So that's how budget goes. It's a lot of people with wishes, and not everyone's going to get exactly what they want.
Charlie, before you get in on the budget and where things are at this moment, you mentioned to me last week after the show, I believe, something that was interesting to you when it came to Menard's letter and what Menard had told these agency heads. He didn't say just go find $800 million to cut. He also said primarily look at grant programs and I believe he said other discretionary spending that has increased in recent years. So what do you read into that?
Well, I think that was a message directed, as I said last week, not so much at the department heads as it was as directed at the lawmakers, because some of the programs, some of the most costly programs the state has, for example, the school funding formula, that's not going to get cut. As a matter of fact, the governor has asked for $350 million new dollars to go into the evidence-based funding formula for local elementary and secondary schools. And the legislature, and my sense is that this could very well happen, wants to add another $200 million. But grants are other things that are smaller sums individually. Oh, what would be an example? Like a grant to a local park district to improve a playground, or a grant to a local school to maybe buy some new equipment, the kind of things that don't apply statewide, but apply to specific areas And those are the kind of things that lawmakers particularly enjoy, because when the ribbon is cut, you know, I'm the legislator, I'll be there to cheer for the ribbon being cut. And now, look, you got this beautiful new facility. And of course, I helped get it for you. And sometimes there are initiatives of legislators themselves. Historically, add-ons to the budget referred to as member initiatives, which in the olden days we'd look at as being pork barrel, although I would say as an aside, a pork barrel project is something in your district that is a vital public improvement in my district. So as I say, I think it's more a warning to lawmakers. Look, if you want to do all the stuff and maybe add a little bit, you're going to have to bite the bullet and raise the revenues. And that's the message that I'm guessing lawmakers are mulling over. And as we mentioned at the beginning, there's always tension between the Senate and the House. And from my experience, senators have a tendency to look on themselves as being the upper chamber, and the House is sort of the rank and file rabble rousers. And that's kind of historically been the way it works for years. And there's always been tension in terms of who will take the first move in putting together the budget. And the fear, and this has happened in the past, is the House will pass a budget, send it to the Senate. The Senate will strip it out and put in its own budget, send it back to the House. And the House has no choice, either has to bite the bullet and accept what the Senate wants, or reject those changes and have it go to a bicameral conference committee to sort out the differences. So from my perspective, we're about where you would expect to be at this time of the year. And the real urgency doesn't actually occur until the end of June, because the new fiscal year starts on July 1st. So although the legislator is talking about, we're going to be done next week, as Patrick suggested, they kind of have some shadow dates in there to take them all the way to the end of May. And even after that, the real deadline is when the new fiscal year starts.
Now, Patrick, when I first saw the legislative calendar for the spring, and I saw this adjournment date of the 24th, quite often it's been right up to the very end of May. And for those that don't really follow this quite as closely or pay attention to some constitutional deadlines that have been put in there, the state has until the end of May to get things through with a simple majority, meaning a budget could pass in the House with 60 votes. But it's going to need more votes, 71, in the House come June 1st. Now, is that big of a deal, Patrick, considering the fact that Democrats have super majorities? They could pass the budget without any, and may do this without any Republican support whatsoever. Is it a big deal to go past that May 31st deadline?
I would gauge that, you know, like you said, I think they're looking for the easiest passage of this budget. So while they have 78 in the House and 40 in the Senate, you know, super majorities, that, you know, not everyone has to be on board. I think, as we've kind of been seeing throughout negotiations, I mean, there's a reason why the governor is maybe, you know, hinting that there might need to be some adjustments, because it, as Andy Menar put in his letter, there's and quotes here, he called it significant enough, end quote, resistance to something. So I haven't gotten around to, you know, doing particular vote counts on that, but to me that signals that, you know, yes, the Democrats have super majorities, but there must be a substantial enough wing that they are calling for adjustments before we even see the specific, you know, where the specific final, you know, sum, what bill number this, you know, the budget's actually going to be filed on. So I would say that they really want to make sure they're done by the end of May, based on some of those trends that we've been seeing in initial reports.
Yeah. And Charlie, one other thing when it comes to the budget, we'll move on because we'll be talking about this in coming weeks, of course. But we heard at the start of the show what the governor had to say, sort of a warning to lawmakers. We're not going to return to some of the budget shenanigans of the past, the sweeping of these dedicated funds, pulling money that was meant for one thing, putting it into something else. He's been consistent on this. I think you have to give that to J.B. Pritzker. It does make things a little more difficult, though, if you're saying, you know, either the revenue is going to be outlined going forward or we're not going to do something. It makes it a little difficult to come to a deal. But at the same time, as I said, he's been consistent on this.
Yes, he has. And I'm guessing that if the legislature chooses to disregard what the governor has said, and if they send him a budget that relies on accounting gimmicks, as they've done in the past, as kind of was traditional back in my day, the governor is going to veto that stuff out. Now, the legislature can come back in the fall and try and restore the money. But the difficulty is if the legislature over appropriates beyond what the state can afford and we go back to those gimmicks, we risk messing up the good credit ratings we've been getting. We've had like 9 credit upgrades since Pritzker became governor. The agencies that look at these things will say, well, you were doing fine, but now you're kind of messed up. As a matter of fact, the Civic Federation, which is a government watchdog group, released its analysis earlier this week on the state's FY25 proposed budget, and the Federation said that it recommends the state exercise caution in spending in FY2025 as revenue growth is slowing, and they support that there should be a balanced budget and not kind of go back to the bad old days when we kind of played around with the numbers. I remember, this is years ago now, when I was an active reporter, one occasion when there was a difference between what the legislature wanted to spend and what the governor's estimates said were available, and they resolved that the governor just said, okay, we'll jack up our estimates by $50 million or whatever it was.
Problem solved at that point.
Yeah.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and Patrick Keck with Gannett. And Charlie, the governor went on a statewide tour a few weeks ago to tout some health coverage legislation that he's pushing. And I thought to myself, okay, well, first when I heard this, I thought this must have passed the legislature. It's already through. And then I thought it must be about ready to pass. Here we are in the final week. It's still awaiting final approval. Do you expect this to go? And I guess, first of all, maybe tell us a little bit about what the governor is trying to accomplish here.
Well, this was a program that the governor unveiled at his State of the State. It's called the Healthcare Protection Act. And it's intended to end some of the practices that health insurance companies employ to kind of control the amount and the cost of healthcare services that individual patients receive. One of the main points, for example, would ban insurers from using something called step therapy to try and hold down prescription drugs. And that's where your doctor says, well, you need this particular drug. And the insurance people say, well, no, maybe you can get this cheaper one and maybe it'll work, and try it. And if it doesn't work, well, then we'll let you get the more important one. The legislation would also ban insurance companies from requiring prior authorization before covering the cost of inpatient psychiatric treatment. It would require insurance companies to update their provider networks every 3 months so that there are not, the insurance company says, well, here's these 30 doctors that we'll cover. And it turns out that half of them are retired, the so-called ghost provider networks. So there are a number of other things in there, but the bottom line is to try and focus more on what the doctor recommends and not so much on the insurance companies saying, well, if we cut back and you maybe don't really need that treatment to save money and pad their bottom line. Now, there's a cost associated with this. the governor's, Emily Miller, who's an advisor in the governor's office, said at a committee hearing last month that the bill would cost the state maybe $40 million to $50 million more in having to pay higher Medicaid benefits and state employee health plans. That was not in the budget's proposal. Well, the bill cleared the House with bipartisan support, and at the moment it is scheduled to be heard in the Senate. The Senate Insurance Committee has a hearing scheduled for next Tuesday, at which time we'll see whether or not the bill will advance. And I'm guessing that it will. As you mentioned, and as the clip at the beginning of the show suggested, the governor toured the state, and he's not done that often. And he's arguing that this is needed to better protect people's health and provide them the benefits that they need, so that the determinations are made on the basis of medical necessity rather than how can the insurance companies save money.
And of course, I know, Patrick, the insurance lobby is pretty strong at the Illinois State Capitol. Maybe that's part of this, some of the delays with getting this through. But have you heard anything, Patrick, that would indicate to you that this is going to run into a real roadblock, or is it likely to go through in the final days?
I would imagine it will pass. The governor himself is expected, this will move forward. I think what struck me and others at the State House, the governor put out polling for this legislation earlier this week. He said it was conducted by his campaign, and it found that of Illinois voters, 61% of the voters, they said they support, this legislation as a whole. And I think, it was trying to figure out what was this poll trying to get at. I think it was to kind of, if there is any maybe concern among, senators, that this is something that is being supported by, the majority of people here in the state. The governor, in the time I've been here, I've been here for two sessions, so he's always had kind of a signature legislative push for the spring session. Last year, it was Smart Start. He, similarly to this, he also kind of toured the state and was able to get that funding that he wanted in the state budget. So I think the governor, typically has, the support of the fellow Democrats within the chambers. So while it might be moving slower than he would want in the Senate, I do think eventually they will get the ducks in a row and it'll eventually end up in his desk.
Well, let me turn to another problem that the state has. This falls under the Pritzker administration, the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, still having problems with professional licensing. And when we say that, we're talking a lot of different occupations are getting caught up in this problem, from nurses to roofers to dentists, barbers, and others, dozens more. They rely on these licenses to be able to operate, and it's just not been a timely process. The department has talked about some of that problem, why it's happening, and what they hope to accomplish with it, maybe try to improve the situation. But Patrick, you wrote about this. How bad is it, and is there any relief in sight?
Yeah, one thing that, this has been, as you noted, this has been a longstanding issue. And last session, lawmakers were hoping that one tool that they pushed would kind of move things along. And they were basically calling for the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation to enter into contract to build out a new software, a more efficient form of conducting things. In an increasingly digital world, this is where people want to get their information, process their information. So under that legislation, they had until March 7th to enter into that contract, and they did not meet that deadline. Basically, what had been touted so much as an efficiency measure, they're struggling to maybe get that off the ground a little bit. Granted, there has been some progress made within the department under new under the new acting secretary, or director, I should say, Camille Lindsay. You know, there's been basically they're trying to do better at communicating when people have issues with their licenses. So that, and they are processing more licenses than they have been beforehand. One thing that was brought up in committee, when there are people that maybe live, you know, in border counties, you know, there's somebody there that spoke on this, you know, when people have a decision to, you know, if they're just out of school and they're looking for employment, you know, they're going to go into Missouri or Iowa, places where it hasn't been such an issue. It hurts the state because you're losing people that want to work in the state now going elsewhere because they actually have that ability to do the job.
Yeah, and Charlie, you know this as well as anybody, because we all know government is not as efficient as we always would like it to be. But there are certain things that government may drag its feet on that the average person doesn't pay a lot of attention to. And then there's things like this. You know, if I've just gone through nursing school and I'm ready to get a job and start working, and yet I'm waiting and waiting and waiting to get this type of, you know, licensing from the state, I mean, it impacts your ability to make a living, for gosh sakes. So this is the type of thing that, you know, I can't say it any other way. They need to get this thing fixed.
It's sort of an ongoing problem across state government in that, from my perspective, quite a lot of the state government's, what would the right word, their information moving systems are still from the last century. They're really not up to date. And this department is a perfect example. They tried to enter into a contract, according to the acting director, and they were disappointed because the contractor couldn't deliver what they wanted. So now they're still living. And they had a 90-day deadline, as Patrick indicated, from last December when the governor signed this bill. And now they're asking for more time. And I thought, Patrick, you had the quote from Holly Woodruff with the Illinois Nurses Association pointing out, she mentioned, it's hard to keep good people that we're educating here in Illinois if they can get a license in Missouri within hours or days, and they're waiting months and months here. And if I'm not mistaken, the department said they had, I think it was like 8 people reviewing these applications. And this is for hundreds of thousands of applications. So they need to upgrade their technology and get it into the 21st century. And they also need to hire more people. And I think the governor's budget includes additional money to hire additional folks to handle these licenses. But yeah, it's a real problem, and it's been ongoing.
Well, just about a minute or so left here, but Patrick, something else you'd reported on, I thought it would be worth a mention, has been something that got a lot of people upset, and that was some publishing of some voter data by these right-leaning publications, newspapers and websites primarily. What is going on with that? We know that there had been a lawsuit filed by the state over this, by Kwame Raoul. Where do things stand with this?
Right. So last week, there was an agreed order made between the publisher and the state. Basically, that spells out, you know, these articles, and they remain online, but in adjusted form. The agreed order allowed them to keep the birth year instead of a specific birth date and like a street that they live on. So not, you know, not 123 Main Street, but they can say so-and-so lives on Main Street. The publisher is in accordance with what the order allows. They had until 5 p.m. on Monday to do so. The publisher maintains that they have the right to publish that information. There's a hearing scheduled for June 7th, and we'll continue to see where this kind of moves forward. We conducted an analysis, the full information that would be listed on sites. They have about 20 websites. statewide, including here the Sangamon Sun. So we conducted an analysis of voters that were listed in the Springfield area. It also included, you know, people in other parts of the county. From what we could find with Springfield, there's about 29,000 or so voters that had their full name, birth date, street address, and whether or not they voted in the 2020 election. There's continued conversations on that, and I think we'll just kind of see how far the state wants to take this.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field, and Charlie, we'll go to you first this week.
Yeah, well, let me add a comment to what we were just discussing. Sean, I thought you were being extraordinarily charitable to refer to these sites as newspapers. They are not. They're paid political propaganda, and as other stories have referred to them as being, quote, pink slime, close quote. But I thought one of the commenters on Rich Miller's website made an astute observation. Calling them pink slime is a real insult to pink slime. So anyway, I'm thinking that Raul should press ahead on this, because just putting the street address, the name of the street, and the birth date, still there's a danger, particularly to police officers or public officials, that this would make it easier for people who have grievances with these officials to locate them. But on to the note from the field. Well, we've talked about the budget, and we've talked about the pressures of all these new programs. The governor announced a day or so ago that the state is launching a new program to provide food assistance during the summer for families with kids who qualify for free or reduced price meals at school. And so you're saying to yourself, well, whoa, what is it? We have these budget problems, and now he's got a new program. Ah, but the bottom line is this is a federally funded program which provides qualifying families with a benefit, a one-time benefit of $120 per kid to be used to buy groceries during the summer months. So this is something that will be helpful to moderate and low-income families with kids. And it also is something that won't cost the state of Illinois anything, because it is totally federally funded.
All right. And Patrick?
Well, I have to kind of give a shout out to a fellow State House reporter, Brendan Moore. He brought this to my attention and others on Twitter. The state last year moved its official budget language onto a bill that would have set the soybean as the official state bean of Illinois. That legislation, again, became the state budget. The language that would have, you know, the soybean language was moved onto another bill, and it went through the House, and now in the Senate, an amendment has been filed to that bill. So for the soybean enthusiast out there, it doesn't look like in that vehicle it won't be happening this session.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for State Week, and our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Gannett's Patrick Keck. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.